there a writing craft book on your bedside table? Has it been there for a while?
Do you keep meaning to get past chapter 2, or chapter 1, or just the first page?
Then the Words to Write By podcast is for you. Hi, I'm Renee. I teach composition and creative writing to college students. My background is in poetry, but I'm working on my memoir.
And I'm Kim. I'm trained as a science journalist, but now I'm trying my hand at short fiction. Each week, we'll be tackling a chapter of some well-known, but perhaps not so well-read, writing craft book.
Together, we'll uncover brilliant insights, face the hard truths, and totally disagree when the author is wrong.
This is our podcast, after all.
And then, we're going to take what we learn and apply it to our own writing.
By doing the book's suggested exercises.
We're inviting you to read along, or just tune in for the Cliff Notes version.
We're committed to improving our own craft, one writing advice book at a time, and we'd love for you to join us. Welcome to Words to Write By.
Hello, dear listener.
Before we start, we're going to talk about our Patreon account and our process group and what you can do to support the show.
Yeah. So if you head on over to Patreon, you'll find our newest bonus episode about note-taking and note cards. And that week we covered Kim's. Workshopped Kim's. It was, well, not workshop, but we discussed. It was actually really fruitful. It was a really interesting conversation. You can also get some notes from the first two books that I wrote. I wrote huge, very detailed study guides for the first two books. There are less detailed now, but if you go to our website, it is free, and I do write up a pretty comprehensive study of what we talk about on the podcast.
In this podcast, we take the writing craft books that you always meant to read and don't read. And the idea is if you wanted to, you could follow along reading the book with us, or you could just listen to the podcast. And if you want extra information, so you're like virtually reading the book, you can check out Renee's notes on the website.
Right. And I give examples and stuff because, you know, they don't always give examples.
We also are doing a process group. It meets every other week, and you can get to it from our website. It's through Meetup, and it's a Zoom link that we do every other Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Yeah. How was it this last week? I had to take my cat to the vet.
It was really good. Oh. Talked about some good stuff. I got some help, so.
Dang it. I missed it. Damn it, Abby. Finally, when was the last time you wrote a review on Apple Podcasts? Something tells me you haven't. You should. You should write us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if it's a nice one, we'll read it on the air.
That's what you can do to support the podcast. And with that, let's get going.
All right. So for these next two chapters, we're still in part three, Help Along the Way. And
of Anne Lamont's Bird by Bird.
Yes, of Anne Lamont's Bird by Bird. There we go. So we got writing groups. It was one chapter. And the other chapter is Someone to Read Your Drafts.
These two ones fall really well together. They're pretty much the same thing. It's like all this advice we've had up till now about just sitting down and writing, that's all good and well. But yeah, you probably want to get some feedback. And at a certain point, you are allowed to tell other people that you're writing.
Yes.
And you are allowed to have people read your stuff and tell you what they think.
Right. She goes over the main stuff, like you're going to hate the people that critique your work at some point.
Even if they're your best friends or your spouse.
Exactly. Writing groups are a different beast, right? I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you have been part of a writing group.
And if you haven't, you really should, because writing groups are a set of people that you are allowed to show your work to that will tell you what they think of your work and will often sit down for a period of time and tell you. And that's not something you can get out of your friends and family necessarily.
Right.
So she talks about some different places to find writing groups of getting feedback. One of them is workshops. Really, Renee's had a lot of experience with this.
Oh, yes. You could take a class. So Lamont comes from the teacher role in this book, and she is a workshop teacher. So that's kind of what she does, I guess, on the side when she's not writing.
So for people that just, when they think about writing instruction, they just think about back to their high school classes or their college creative writing class. How is a workshop different than that?
Oh, workshop? You know, usually they sit in a circle, you know, you trade each other's work, you read out loud sometimes, or maybe if it's a longer piece, then you read it at home and then you marked it up and brought it back. And people usually sit in a circle and then they talk smack. No, they critique your work, and they always usually start, or at least this is how I learned to do it and what I made my students do. They had to start with something nice. something positive, and then they have to follow it up with something, a critique of some kind. So yeah, that's pretty much a workshop, and that's pretty standard.
Yeah. A lot of things like you're not really supposed to respond. People are supposed to tell you what they think, and you're supposed to just listen to it and get what advice you can out of what they say.
That's really difficult for people to sit there and just like hear a critique and not be allowed to say anything. But let me tell you, it's really important to not say anything, because it's almost as if this is like a simulation of what the reader is thinking. And when you publish and you send it out into the world, you can't respond back to people.
Right.
You know, you don't know what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. Your time is much better spent listening and taking notes. And then you can rant about it later on. You can put it aside for a week and look at it later. All that stuff. I think this is one of the things that happens in critique groups, is that you get someone that wants to respond to what someone says. I think you just need to clamp down on that, even though it's obviously they're not getting your piece. And if you tell them this one piece of information, they're going to start, suddenly they're going to love it. Everything's going to make sense. But the problem is they didn't get that one piece of information. So really, rather than tell them, keep it in your mind. And actually when you rewrite, put that bit of information in.
Right. Or sometimes when people will speak, they'll try to defend.
They always try to defend.
And it's like, it's not the point. That's not the point. There's one that I hear a lot in the workshops that I ran when I was teaching, which was, well, that's the way it happened.
For like memoir writing, you know?
Or like creative nonfiction. Or sometimes, well, I based this off of, you know, something that actually happened in my life. And this is exactly how it went down. Because somebody told the person, well, this doesn't seem very realistic. Or what's the drive of this person? Or this is a crazy story. And then they say, well, it actually happened, as if that's somehow supposed to stump the critiquer and make us go, oh!
It puts me in mind of a fairly major horror writer, not Stephen King level, but like one step down, and reading a piece by him. And he was complaining about kind of how his editor didn't get him. His complaint was that he had set up the situation where they would find the dead person or whatever detail it was in the garage next to the washer and dryer. And editor's like, this is all great, but why is the washer and dryer there? Like, you know, why would that be in the garage? I was wondering, is that part of the plot or whatever? And he's like, no, in California, everyone has their washers and dryers in the garage. And I was thinking, yeah, but in other parts of the country, they have them elsewhere. And it was one of those details where this author was like so assured that this is the way things are, and you should naturally assume that they're going to find the washer or dryer in there, in the garage. And the reason why nobody else got it was because other people didn't see the washer or dryer in the garage in other places of the country, because they have basements.
That's a great story. That sums it up pretty much right there. If I had a dollar for every time my husband from Ohio complains about how we do things here in California, I bet that guy was just complaining.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's funny.
Anyway, one thing that she has in this chapter is she's got an OMG story about a person in a group. And I think we should just read it, because it is lovely. So the setup is, they were doing a workshop and somebody got up there, was an inexperienced writer that tried to do something experimental, and it was awful. So the other people critique his piece. So it says, they mentioned things they liked, things they thought he had done well, moments here and there that worked. They said that the dialect had gotten in the way, but there was a great deal of heart and emotion in the story that had moved them. And da-da-da-da, it's all this bit. Then a young woman who had been silent raised her hand. Am I crazy? She implored. Am I losing my mind? Am I the only person here who doesn't think it worked at all? Did anyone actually think there was one believable character, one meaningful image? And she went on and on while the rest of us stared at her, entranced, as if frozen in cobra hypnosis. Much of what she said was true. And then it goes on to talk about how Lamont dealt with this person. And the person justified by saying, I think people are patronizing him. He's not going to get better if people don't tell the truth, she wailed. And Lamont replied, but what you think is the truth is just your opinion.
Right.
OMG, that was like... I mean, you have that feeling every once in a while. You're hearing someone, you're just like, you just want to tell them that they're no good.
Right.
But...
Well, the thing is, she wasn't trying to be mean.
No, I think she was really trying to be honest.
Right. She was probably afraid that if they were too nice, this writer wouldn't work on their stuff. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't become a better writer because they think everything was fine.
Right.
Later on, I marked this one quote. It kind of sums up that whole horror scenario of a workshop. She says, "You don't always have to chop with the sword of truth. You can point with it too."
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the advice here for us when we're in critique groups is that you're not going to make this person into a published writer. What you're there to do is to encourage them to keep writing and to guide them just a little bit to take the next step. Because people don't go from writing horribly to writing great just because someone completely wailed on them in a critique group. That's never actually going to make a person a better writer. What makes them better is like, oh, maybe you should work on the dialect here and your next rewrite, and then write something else and be encouraged about that. And continually writing, maybe some of that stuff will trickle through.
One of my favorite teachers at SF State, his philosophy, which I've met some teachers that have this philosophy, they did studies and found that just giving positive critique actually is almost just as effective as giving other critique. Well, that's what he does. He only ever gave positive stuff. But what he did was he went into detail, like very deep detail into what was working and why.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't like I wasn't getting feedback that all it was just gushing over my work. You know, he did this to everybody. It was like it showed you kind of a skeleton of this is what you did really well and this is why it really, really works. And then your brain goes, oh, I got to do that more.
And if you're doing it in a group and you're going around and you get that for your dialogue and the person next to you gets it for their setting, you realize, oh, I guess my setting isn't good. What did he really like with that person's setting? There's a lot of information you can get from listening to the critiques of other people in the group.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you write to be read, right? It's like simulating the reader world.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any OMG stories?
Oh, my God. Yes.
Okay.
So I was in an MFA program. I've got some horror stories. So there was this dude that we nicknamed Voldemort in our critique groups. He was a character. There was this one woman who did a presentation in a class that he was in, and he wouldn't even let her present. He just kept interrupting her and trying to claim that she was wrong about her facts when he himself was actually wrong about the fact that he was pointing out was wrong. And I was so mad that, this is back when I was a smoker, I went downstairs after the class and started smoking. He came up to me, he wanted a light, and I said, I'm not going to give you a light. You are a total dick. You don't know how long she spent on that, but that was work that she did, and then you just shit on it. So, no. And I mean, like, at that point, we were mortal enemies. But then this guy, he once wrote a poem for workshop intentionally to make fun of other writers in the class.
Oh, he was just so clever.
He's so clever. Yeah, this guy, oh my gosh. I wouldn't say it's a rumor. It is hearsay. Somebody was in a different class with him, and thank goodness I wasn't in that class. So the teacher is doing the class. It's kind of like a loose workshop where, you know, you probably read like poetry and then everyone discusses why it's working and then they try to write their own stuff. Well, the teacher asked, you know, anyone have any questions or, oh, did anyone like to make a comment? And this guy stood up, went to the board, got a pen out and started illustrating his point on the board. Oh my God.
That's pretty bad.
And this is not just creative writing. In composition, I was the TA for a grammar class, a very hard grammar class. It was like a weeding out class for the composition department. They don't have it anymore. It was called English 657. And the teacher was sick, and so I just took over for the day.
That'd be a great name for a rock band. English
657. 657. English 657. That would be a good, yeah. If we ever start a rock group.
Okay, yeah.
It'll be English 657.
Okay.
I taught the class for like one day, and I'm not sure what it is about grad students. I don't know what it is with fragile egos. I don't understand. But after the class, a student came up to me, and she critiqued the way I held the chalk. I'm like, I just want to go have a cigarette. Leave me alone.
this is just fun because sometimes you see behavior that's just so out of the realm of normal and you just kind of go WTF. I was in a critique group for a writing conference. So everybody was really solid writers that got into it. And we had a number of sessions. Every day, two people would get their work critiqued. And different people did different amounts, you know, critiquing on the story or the submitted story. And as anyone whose work I've critiqued in the past, I like to write lots of notes. I don't know. Nobody else really wrote nearly as many notes as I did, but my people got lots of notes. Anyway, so this was a writer's conference that had an interesting spread of people that were, you know, a couple years into MFA programs, a bunch of people that had just were writing for themselves and were getting into this, a lot of people that maybe were some writing adjacent field and getting into writing. And there was also a set of older women that I think kind of did their equivalent of a summer vacation by going to these various writer conferences. Because this woman had a piece that was well written, but it also had kind of a feel of something that had been workshopped many times, or like some longer piece of story that she'd been working on different parts, and she kept bringing them in to read these parts. Anyway, there was one person in the class who had a story set on a farm in Iowa with all that great, you know, teenager stuck on a farm angst. And it was very well written. It had beautiful language. It had great emotion. You know, it was a solid piece. But as we get ready to critique, she stands up and says, you know, I have been coming to this conference for many years. And I was at name drop somebody, you know, that one there. And this piece here, this is the best piece ever. This is just fantastic. It is going to go so far. I know that this is going to be this phenomenal piece and you're going to be a phenomenal writer, yada, yada, yada. And everyone's like, okay. And finally, like, the instructor is like that, okay, well, does anyone have something to critique about, like, what worked or what didn't work for them? I don't know if she did this for every year. She picked one person in the class and did that, or if it was just something special. But it was like, lady, when you're in a critique group, you should realize that you are not the instructor.
Right, exactly. Well, listen to this too. Sometimes the instructor needs to do something, and the instructor did not stop Voldemort. Sometimes you got to do something, and I'm glad that teacher said something. And so here's the thing, right? Like, you travel all the way out there. You put all this time and energy into something, and you need some feedback. You only get so much time, mm-hmm. and someone just took up your time.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, gushing about it, that's nice, but you didn't go there to get an ego boost.
Yep. And it'd be something different if she was the instructor of the course, if she was a published writer, if she was an agent that was coming in. Great, fantastic, but you know, it's not like her critique actually helped this guy in any way.
Right, right. Yeah, it has to be helpful. So sometimes positive feedback. Are you in a workshop group now?
I'm in a couple of writing groups, yeah. I was actually thinking that we could talk a little bit about how one starts a writing group, because one of the things I often hear from people who aren't in writing groups, it's a bit like relationships. There are a whole bunch of single people out there that are desperate to get into a relationship and it's just not working. And so they look at their friends that aren't in relationships, even if it's not maybe the best. It's like, what did they do to get into that relationship? How does one start a writing group or find a writing group?
That is like the perfect metaphor. I mean, because even now, today with online, like a lot of people are finding their workshops online. Mm-hmm. But then people are kind of burnt out on online and then they're asking you like, well, how did you meet your husband? Of course it was, you know, whatever ago.
I had the most romantic meet, but yes.
You did.
You did. You told me the story. You two are so cute.
Anyway, so how do you find one? Well, how did you find yours?
Okay, so mine was literally one of those things where I went to a Shut Up and Write, and for some reason, a person that was there that really wanted to get a critique group, they needed to find another person for the critique group. And we literally were just telling what we're writing about, nothing else. And at the end of the session, he like tapped me on the shoulder and said, would you like to come to our critique group? Here's the information. Because I was writing science fiction and he really wanted to find someone doing science fiction. So sometimes like you're just in the right place and the skies open up and your critique group just welcomes you in.
Yeah, sometimes it's magical and easy. Most of the workshops that I've been in like lately have all been paid. Like I have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, there's an instructor and there's this one woman specifically that I work with, that I've worked with for a long time. And she's very positive and she's very sweet. She gives a good critique, but it's like the people she gathers, like somehow she finds these really cool people.
Usually people that are really bad aren't going to pay money to do a critique.
Oh, yeah.
Like that's a fair amount of money that you pay. You have to be a certain level of experience to do that. And if you're not very good and you do it once, you'll never do it again. But if you're a good writer and you do it and it works, then you probably keep going. So you're selecting for that. having a barrier to entry is not a bad thing for a writing group like that. It's transactional. You find the class, you pay the money, you show up, you get the critique, and you're not going to have people like space out on you.
Yeah, exactly.
So one of the advices they give people is like, you know, if you're in a class and you basically target the people who you like and see if they want to form a writing group. What I liked about these chapters is Lamont basically says, and then they'll say no to you. This is one of those ones that it should work in theory, but often doesn't for some reason. I think there's just some barrier, like this workshop that I was in. I made names of everybody in that group that had really good pieces and good critiques. I didn't include that older woman. And afterwards, I formed a Google group with all their names and talked about putting them on this. And, you know, like everyone was very enthusiastic because everyone's always enthusiastic at those things. And I've had like maybe 3 people in that group ever get back to me about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else is just crickets. So I think you should try that approach because, you know, who knows? It just takes one, just like dating. On the other hand, I think the problem is that they might not be at that point looking for a critique group. And if someone isn't looking for a critique group, then you can't do anything about it. Again, with relationships.
Right. And just like relationships, you have to go sometimes, you know, join a run group. If you're a runner, join a run group. And then maybe you'll find your significant other there. You know, join a creative writing class and perhaps you will find other writers.
But even if you don't, you'll get feedback, which is what you're actually there for.
Right.
I once went to one of the Reddit groups and I set up a writing group there. And I got a whole bunch of interest. So that was pretty cool. And I kind of vetted the people beforehand. The problem was we decided to do it over like a Discord server where like people would post on a particular day and people would comment. And the first one went okay. But the problem was we just didn't have the same, like I got behind in my writing as well. So people kept delaying posting and it just kind of went off the rails. I think part of the issue there was that we didn't have a set time where we would meet face to face. Like people writing notes on someone's piece just did not seem to have the same unity that she describes with critique groups where like, you know, they really become friends and people you want to hang out with and people you talk to.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what I found was you had to see the other people as people. Like if you're more abstract, if it was just like passing documents back and forth, I think you really lost that connection that really helps a writing group.
Mm-hmm.
More recently, I kind of had an impromptu writing group form, and in the end, only one other person was a connection I made. But that person I made kind of randomly, and what I found really helped, if you want to form a writing group, make sure you have the time to really focus on forming that writing group, because everyone's enthusiasm is really high at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
and then it goes downhill. So it's one of those things where if someone emails you and you email them back within 15 minutes, chances are they're still at their computer and they're going to read that email.
Right.
So my two advices on forming a writing group is number one, figure out some way that you can meet either face-to-face or on a Zoom meeting on a particular time so you get to know who they are and they get to know who you are and they become a real person. And when you're ready to form a critique group, be on top of what exactly is you want, what people are going to be reviewing, and just be like anybody that pings you for that, you follow up and see if it's going to work. Do you have any other advice for like if you're in a critique group or you're trying to form a critique group that... Have you ever formed an out critique group outside of class?
The most successful was a friend of mine had set one up. I was an undergrad and we were in the same poetry class and she made friends in the community. That was great. I don't know how she found these guys, but they were great. And we met like every week. And sometimes that was the only reason a poem got written. And I loved it. And she roped me in and I am forever grateful of that workshop. It was very helpful for me at the time. And after that, I've never been in a successful workshop that was grassroots. I've even like, people are like, hey, let's keep meeting after this class. I'm like, cool, let's do it. And it doesn't last.
It doesn't work. What do you propose?
Pay money.
No. What do you propose with the people say after, let's meet after this class, keep going?
I usually say yes. And like, then we have a couple of sessions and then we just don't meet anymore.
Is it because you run out of material or because people are just busy and they drop out?
I think because artists are flaky and I'm flaky and we're all, like I said, procrastinators. And we have to figure out what kind of procrastinator we are and the things that will force us to get work in. you know, we have the best intentions. We have this idea in our head of like who we're going to be, what kind of writer we're going to be. And all we have to do is just really just sit there and be motivated. And it doesn't happen.
And then you have something for the critique group and you kind of drop out. I think that's also the way a lot of critique groups fail in the end, is that people all have projects initially and they're all very enthusiastic about it. But after about 6 months or a year, people have finished those projects. And if they don't start something new, then there's no reason for them to go. Because it's very hard to go to critique group if you don't have anything to critique or to get critiqued.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
So the alternative is online stuff where you have one where like kind of it's a drop-in session. And different people can come in and they do stuff. But the problem there sometimes is that you're seeing different people's work all the time and you don't have that continuity. So a legitimate thing is if someone critiques you and say, I just don't understand what this character's backstory is, and that's because the previous chapter had their backstory, there's not much you can get out of that person because they don't know the whole longer piece.
Right. Have you learned anything really awesome from a workshop? Something happened in the workshop or just a piece of advice that you received once that was like awesome?
The workshop I went to actually had instruction along with it. And the main instructor's advice was just brilliant. We did some text analysis about what worked and what didn't work for pieces, how something was phrased and done. And I'd never taken a fiction writing class before that point. So that was also the reason why it was really, really useful. Like the first time you take a class in any subject, you learn so much.
Yeah, totally. I'm kind of like a semi-narrative writer. I write usually very plainly, like it's mostly an idea poem. I mean, I try to work on words. You've heard me on the podcast. I'm concerned about the sound of the language a lot, but to other poets, it's not even close. Like some people, like it's all about the language. And I remember in workshops, in the beginning, I would sit there and I'd be like, I really hate these people's work sometimes. Like I'm reading it going, I would never read this poem on my own. And sometimes I would even feel almost offended. I'm like, language poetry, really? Did you just like write this to confuse us? Like make it some kind of puzzle? Like what the heck? And then it clicked. It dawned on me halfway through the first semester. I went, wait. This is just my personal preference. They have different goals. They are writing different poetry. They have different goals. And my job is to figure out what they're trying to do and to help them get to what they want. It's not going to be my goal, but it's their goal. And that made me a much better writer.
Nice. And I think that actually segues to the next part, the next chapter that she has, which is someone to read your drafts. Because that's very much a response for beta reading. And before we get into the chapter itself, that whole business about looking at a person's piece and trying to figure out what it is they want to do with the piece and what their goal is, and then to simply say, does this work for me or does this not work for me? That's something you can use when a person is of a certain level of writing, because you can start to actually see what their intent is. But even if someone's writing very poorly, it's like, oh, you want this thing to be scary here. So what can I tell you that would help you be scary, as opposed to saying, oh, I think this should be more satirical here. It's very easy to suggest somebody write it the way you want it read versus what they want to write.
Right. So this is a very apt chapter, given that I just read half of Kim's draft, and she hates me now, just like the draft said. Or just like Lamotte said. There's a couple in here that are pretty funny. How about
my first response, if they have a lot of suggestions, is never profound relief that I have someone in my life who will be honest with me and help me do the very best work of which I am capable. No, my first thought is, well, I'm sorry, but I can't be friends with you anymore because you have too many problems and you have a really bad personality and a bad character. And that is completely natural. Nobody likes criticism.
No, even when you know you need it, you aren't going to like it.
And part of getting us to write these things is that we have to believe that we're writing it, that we're writing something absolutely fantastic. Just along the same mindset of like shitty first drafts versus editing mode. When you're writing a story, you have to love it to keep going on it. You have to believe it's really great, or that, you know, these are minor things that can be fixed. But then you have to give it to somebody and then say, no, it's not quite so minor.
So it's interesting. I kind of have the opposite problem, mm-hmm. is I think all my work sucks. And I have a really hard time getting it written. And then people are like, no, it actually worked out. I'm like, oh, really? Okay, cool. Or this needs work. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll just cut that whole thing out. Like I'll just cut out whole pages. I'm like, oh, they didn't like it. Nope. I'll throw that shit out. And I probably shouldn't have.
When you're getting someone to beta read your stuff, you're not asking for an editor because they're not going to publish it. If they're an editor, all rules are different because they're going to give you money to and publish this thing. So they have a say of saying, you know, this character here's subplot is not working. It has to be cut or whatever. But if they're not an editor, if they're a beta reader, they're supposed to read it like somebody picking up your book. And what you're really wanting from them is just the reaction.
Hmm.
And everyone's going to have a different reaction. You really aren't obliged to change the stuff that the beta readers tell you to change.
Right. Okay, so this beta reader thing is kind of new to me. The first time I ever heard that term, I'm sure it's old, that term was not on my radar until I listened to that Brandon Sanderson podcast.
Writing excuses,
right. And so I used to listen to that podcast a bit, and I remember him talking about beta readers. I'm like, what the hell is a beta reader? And I gotta say, I wouldn't consider a workshop a beta reader.
I think that's a completely different thing.
And I've never actually had a beta reader.
Right, you passed me some of your chapters.
Right, but I asked for critique.
Yeah. And not only that, but you're asking for critique on a single chapter. And I think part of what a beta reader does is they look at the work more as a whole.
Hmm.
I mean, if you have a short story, your critique partner is going to be your beta reader. But if you got something that's longer, mm-hmm. like I've never commented on the overall structure. And like I can tell you what I like about a particular chapter you've written, but I don't know in the context whether or not that information should be there. And that's, again, one of the problems with deciding just to cut something because someone doesn't like it in a workshop is because maybe it serves a bigger purpose in the overall story.
Yeah, I can see that. It's weird. I mean, I don't think I could be a beta reader.
Well, you were a beta reader for me.
No, because I gave you a critique.
No. Giving critique is fine. It's like you can ask people to be beta readers for different reasons. Like in my story, at some point I may get somebody that's a really big D&D geek to read it through and just give me critique on the D&D stuff.
Oh, yeah. They're fickle.
Right. Or to see what works.
That's actually
good. Yeah. But not in an editor like you should change this. But you're going to give critiques reading it. You're just going to read in a larger context. Like one of the things you noticed in my story is I had a particular way of phrasing dialogue where it was the person said something, the tag of who said it, and then more of what they said, which is standard practice in journalistic writing because you don't use that many quotes throughout a piece. But when you're doing a whole page after page of dialogue and you're falling into that trap, it gets monotonous. And you didn't notice that until like two or three chapters in mm-hmm. that I was doing it. And then once you saw it, you thankfully pointed it out on so many different occasions. But then after that, I trained myself to look at it and to see. But a chapter by chapter workshop or critique group might not pick up on that. It's something that can only be seen in a larger context.
Right. So I marked it so that you wouldn't have to look for it.
Right.
I wasn't trying to be like, you did it again. You did it again. Like, I wasn't trying to be like that. I was just like, oh, this is so she can just find them and she doesn't have to like search around for it.
I was just trying to be helpful.
I'm sorry.
But that's what Lamont's talking about when right. she like says the person doesn't like it because it's being pointed out.
Right. Here's the thing. I mean, I don't know if I'm on the spectrum or whatever, but I tend to like, or grading, since I've graded like thousands upon thousands
and
of pages.
And a teacher is a very different thing than a...
Right. And in my brain, it just compartmentalizes everything and it just looks at it and is like, yes, no, yes, no. Like first impression, I think is usually the best. And I don't question. I'm like, nope, that doesn't work. Yep. That works. Okay. That works. Nope. Cut. Blah, blah, blah. I just go through real quick. I don't expect the other person to take all of my suggestions.
You also really did not like my cliches.
No writer likes a cliche. That cliche is the enemy of writing. It is, you know what I tell students? A cliche is the fast food of writing. It is the prepackaged dinner of writing where it's like, here is this thing that's been made up and it's full of salt and it's not good for you. So here's the thing. Cliches are so common that they deflate the use of metaphor. If you try to use a metaphor, it's a cliche, it doesn't work anymore. The brain doesn't even see the image or make the connection because it's so common that it just passes in the head in one ear to the other. And I do write cliches. And my workshop leader, she sent me critique a couple weeks ago and she said cliche next to something I'd written. So it's not just you. It happens to me too.
They sneak in there, don't they?
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is that this is something that someone's reading, a beta reader can give you. And I'll like ask questions at the end of each of my chapters. You know, what did you think of this new character? What was your engagement for this one? I did a couple of beta reading for one friend. And at the end of every chapter, I gave him a a 1 out of 5 engagement level for the chapter. And that way you could just tell, like, and it wasn't that you couldn't have, like, one chapter was an engagement level of a 3 or a 2. That happens. But if there's a whole string of them that are 3s and then they go back to 5s, then, you know, maybe that's something where you need to work on.
You know what would be really helpful? And there was that podcast, we interviewed some dude from at Print Run. Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we interviewed an agent on there, and they do something very similar to this. And I've actually done this in my composition classes, where I will read like a page or two out loud and critique it out loud to the students.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a brave student will let me do that in front of the entire class, but usually I'll bring in a paper that came from last semester.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, let's look at this paper. And this is what I would do with it. And I have my pen and it's on the screen and they're seeing what I mark. I'm reading out loud and I'm going through my thought process as I'm grading this.
I mean, that's what you're asking for your beta readers. You're asking to get into the mind of a reader that's absorbing your story and finding out what someone reading it is thinking at this point. Because you as the author know exactly what you're thinking at that point of the story, but you don't know what the reader is thinking. And you have a wide amount of readers. People like different things. You know, you're never going to please anyone. But if you get someone that is willing to try to figure out what it is you're going for and gives you that honest reaction to whether or not it works, and they're willing to do it for a longer piece, like a novel, that's gold right there.
Yeah.
Even if they didn't like it.
Even if they, that could be really helpful. Sometimes you're going to get a workshop group and there's one person in there that no matter what they say, you know you're not going to take their advice. You don't like the work that they write, and you don't like the critiques that they give. And you know what? Just don't say anything. Just be like, thank you. As individuals, when we come to a piece and we start reading, we're bringing our own individuality to it. So in a workshop, you're getting an individual with, you know, a whole history and their that baggage. They're bringing that whole baggage into your piece, which is why it's so important to have a workshop. To get different people from different life experiences to come together and then share their thoughts on this experience that you've created for them, which I think is really kind of cool.
Yeah. And the nice thing about critique group is like one person after another, like someone will say such and such, like, oh no, that didn't work. And that person will say, actually, no, it really worked for me. This and this and this. Oh, okay. Multiple opinions on something are nice. So she has something that I'm referring to as a toxic beta reader. And this is a person that you've found that gives your manuscript the time, that reads it all through, that sends you back critique, and that's fantastic. And then you start reading and you discover that, here she says, he says things about your work in the nicest possible tone of voice that are totally negative and destructive. You find yourself devastated, betrayed. Here you've done this incredibly gutsy thing, shown someone your very heart and soul, and he doesn't think it's any good. He says how sorry he is that this is how he feels. Well, let me tell you this. I don't think he is. I think destroying your work gave him real pleasure.
Yeah, that was Voldemort.
Yeah, but Voldemort was nasty overall. This
right.
is someone that has a surface of helping you out. But in the end, you just feel crappy about your work afterwards.
Mm.
This is one of those places where you can't be gaslit. You need to know your feelings. And if someone gives you a critique back and they're really hurtful about it, even if they say it in the nicest possible ways, that's not a person you want to have in your life. That's not a person you want reading your work.
Yeah. And there are nasty jerks out there
mm-hmm.
who get off on being a jerk. And I've met plenty of them. Let me tell you, the art group can be a toxic place. And there's been a lot of toxic workshops that I've been in, and I'm done with those. I'm mm-hmm. done. I won't ever do that. I like this one part she says at the end of the piece. She says, writing is about filling up when you are empty, letting images and ideas and smells run down like water. Just as writing is also about dealing with the emptiness. The emptiness destroys enough writers without the help of some friend or spouse.
Yeah. And somebody like that leaves you empty and leaves you discouraged and keeps you from doing your work. When we're giving critique of someone's work, we always need to have in the back of your mind that we're all on the same team here.
Yeah.
And that you're just going to make yourself better as a writer by helping other people around you. And they're never going to steal your book contract. It doesn't work that way. Nobody's getting a book contract.
Yeah.
No one's getting in. I think that sometimes this happens maybe in classes where basically there's kind of a like, you know, who's going to be the teacher's favorite, who's going to be the best. And there are individuals that will purposely sink other people just for putting them down and raising their own status within the class. But in the bigger scheme of things, there's no reason why you should make someone feel bad about their writing, even if it sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. What would be the point? Like, it's not really going to help them.
Mm-hmm. I think this is also a case where you go to various forums where they post on things and people give feedback on various story ideas or writing ideas. And there's always some jerk that just likes to tear things apart.
It's pretty much the toxic beta reader is a troll.
Yeah.
I had this one guy. A friend of mine was teaching a poetry class and, you know, they needed another student. And although I was teaching at the school, I can sign up for class. So I did. I signed up for his class. I'm like, well, I want to make sure it doesn't get canceled. And also, I like this class. I paid, you know, and it was fun. And I really liked that teacher. So, well, it so happens that on the first day, enough people added that everything was fine. And I thought, okay, well, I'm an adjunct. I'm not rich. And I was doing you kind of a favor. So I'm going to just bow out, right? Well, the first day we did have a little workshop before, you know, we found out there were going to be enough students and we were supposed to, you know, he emailed us before class and said, please bring something to just share. And so I said, okay. So I pulled something that I had to share and he paired us up and I was paired up with this young man and we read each other's work and he read mine and he says, it's so negative.
Yeah.
And I'm like, excuse me? So should I only write about positive things? Like, what kind of critique is that? I was like, that felt like the red pill, you know? I was like, is he trying to mess with me or something? Like, I've never gotten a critique like that. What was that?
Whether or not he was a troll or not, he wasn't reading the piece to find out what you wanted to do. He was just giving you his reaction. I mean, it's a little bit helpful. From that, you learn there are portions of people out there that look at your poems and say that, you know, sounds kind of negative. But yeah, it's like one of those comments that kind of just sort of sinks a person.
Well, it wasn't going to sink me. I've been beaten so bad, dear listener, in workshops that it's very hard.
Yeah, but he didn't know that. I mean, for all you know, you could have been like, you know, this 21-year-old woman that was just, you know, first time trying to get back into school and all that stuff. And
that would have affected me if I wasn't like already like in my 40s or late 30s and I was an early writer. Yeah, that probably would have effed me up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so, you know. But luckily, that was not the case. And also, somewhere in the middle of the semester, a teacher got sick and I had to teach a class. And he didn't realize that I was also a teacher. So that was kind of weird. I was like, so, my negative poetry somehow got me this far, buddy. But it was a weird comment. Don't make comments like that at people. There's no reason we need to shut people down.
Just make two good comments. If you can't say anything nice, just write two good comments about what they're good at and let it go. Yeah. I think actually it's good to recognize when something isn't your style of writing. And although it's a little bit frustrating when someone says, you know, I don't read such and such, but I'll give you my feedback. At least you're forewarned.
Right.
I don't read this, but I'll give you my feedback. I dearly liked your dialogue and I really like this thing. And that's all you need to say.
Yeah.
So what do you think of these two chapters?
I think they were a ramble fest. In a very rambolicious Rambleville. She likes to do that. She rambles. What did you think?
I think they were really good experience. I think they were really good at putting in practice what someone will get when you start showing your work to other people. I also think that it's very easy to read them very fast, just kind of laugh at the funny stuff and not get as much out of them. There's sometimes where bullet points work because it makes you focus on what's going on. It's easy to just read it as kind of a slice of life. This is how things are for Anne Lamott. This is how these things are for her hypothetical beginning writer. And then think, but I'm not like that.
True.
Because, you know, that's not me. Obviously, I'm going to give my pieces to somebody and they're going to love it. These chapters really work well for someone who's already been in a critique group, has already experienced these things, and is reading and saying, yes, that's exactly what I was experiencing.
I don't know. I felt like reading it. I was like, yeah. Like, it just was like, blah, 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 blah. Workshops can be bad. Blah, 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 blah. Workshops can be good. This is when it could be bad. And this is when it could be good. And here's a little story. And here's a... And I'm like, oh. Yeah, I don't know. I'm an impatient reader. That's just my style. I'm an impatient reader. And some of the asides she has sometimes, I'm just like...
I went and listened to an earlier podcast from this book. because I was in a car with somebody. I was riding. We were listening.
Our podcast?
Our podcast.
Oh.
We first started this book. And you know something? We loved that she didn't have bullet points and that she was really personal and snarky and had all this humor and stuff in it.
I don't mind the snark and
but I get it. I'm saying, I think this is, we're definitely getting to the point where we've read enough of her stuff that we're kind of getting tired. It's like, it doesn't matter how much you love the president when he's elected, by the time he's been in office for 6 years and he comes on and does an address to the nation, it's like, man, can he have a different way of speaking?
That's so true. Oh my God. These books, it's like reading the end of a presidency.
Yes.
Oh my God. So good. Lamoth, the president.
Do you have any idea for exercises? Should we start a critique group and see how it goes? No.
I mean, we could if you want. Kim has not murdered me yet, dear listener. I probably deserve it. But yeah, I don't know. We usually workshop something together anyway, every podcast. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Kim. What would we do with this one?
I don't know. Can we just say that maybe there isn't something for this one?
There might not be anything besides a workshop, but we workshop things all the time. Yeah, I think this one's a wash. Either you're in a workshop group or you're not. And right now, I'm in a workshop group. That's great. Holy crap. This is great, great, great.
Yeah?
For me. At least right now.
So good luck if people are looking for workshops or writers groups or whatever. Just remember that it's the Dan Savage approach to relationships, which is that, you know, everyone of them is going to fail until one of them works.
Yeah.
And everyone you reach out to is going to say, no, I don't want to do it until somebody says, yep, I will. And suddenly it works. So yep. Be hopeful.
Don't be a dick. That's the big one. Don't be a dick. Yes. Be a nice person.
Yes. Okay. Thank you guys for listening. And like we said at the beginning, if people are enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you were to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to it, or just a rating. That'd be fantastic. Get more people to hear our podcast.
Yep. And share it with a friend if you think that they're a writer and they, you know, would probably get some benefit out of this.
Absolutely. Okay. Goodbye. Take care.
Bye.
Words to Write By is produced by Renee Nelson and Kim Smith-Adam. Our theme music is Roll Back the Carpet by Cool Cat Music. Have a great day.
Maybe cut this out. But, so you might want to cut this out. We'll see. So many stories, you have to cut them all out.